Hi everybody, I think we're going to kick off now if that's all right. Can you all hear us? Can everybody hear us okay, or should we use the handheld mics, or are we all right? We're okay? Okay, great. Hi everybody, good morning. My name is Rosha Gunn. I am a producer, programmer, sometimes artist, and have worked in Ireland for a long time and about to take up the role of Artistic Director of Arts Admin in London later this summer. I'm thrilled to be joined by two fabulous people here today. First, Tom Bonte, who is the Artistic Director of Boerschouwburg in Brussels. It's very hard to pronounce. I got it wrong, but I'm going to continue to refer to it as Boerschouwburg. Say it properly, Tom.
Boerschouwburg.
Yeah, nearly, nearly. And by Bush McCarzel, who is the Artistic Director of Dead Centre, who have been making extraordinary performance works in Dublin and internationally since 2012 with Souvenir. And we're here to talk this morning about international networks and how they operate. Are they useful? Why are they useful? And how can they influence and create opportunities for artists, both in terms of the kind of longevity and sustainability of their work, but also in terms of the actual art making itself? Does it make your work better, more interesting, more exciting? And does it make your work, your life as an artist, more rich, I suppose? So maybe, Tom, because people wouldn't be so familiar with Boerschouwburg, could you tell us a little bit about the Art Centre, what it does, how you program, and for people who might have never been there?
Yeah, well, I can talk a lot about it, but that's not the idea, I guess. First of all, thanks for coming and thanks for having me. It's been a while since I was in Ireland, I have to admit. Okay, Boerschouwburg. So it's an art center, an art venue in the very heart of Brussels, so very in the city center, that exists for a long time by now. It's more than 50 years conceived as an art center. And it's multidisciplinary by nature, which means that we have a music program, we have film, video, visual arts, we have a performing arts program, and we have also quite a bit of what we call topicality, that is everything that has to do with debates, discussions, workshops, that kind of stuff going on in the house. I'm there the director now for a bit more than 8 years, and the great thing was, when I started, was that Boerschouwburg was a bit, well, in a dead street, I would say, which gave me the advantage of being able to create something new, to build something new out of that. And I'm happy now that I can say after 8 years that's really something we did, the whole team. Maybe that's also something to say. It's a team of, by now, 23, 24 people. Doing all that stuff. We do by now also more than 500 activities in a year, so we're not producing anything. We're a very much a receptive organization, inviting artists, inviting thinkers, philosophers to present their work with us. And what we did 8 years ago was make a kind of a change from, I learned here that I cannot use the word shift.
I was trying to help you out.
Yeah, sure, that's right. Yeah. So we made a change to the first question that came up was like, okay, what's the role that a house can play in Brussels? So what we did is like, okay, we're not going to add another seasonal program to the a lot of things that already happen in Brussels. And the other thing that I didn't want to do was create a lot of festivals, because also there's a lot of festivals going on in the whole of Belgium. And it felt like it would become like one big competition of festivals or another seasonal program. So what we in the end arrived, it's not the end of the world, this idea, was something in between, that we would use the idea of what it can be a strength of a festival, namely that you can work on a focus, on a thematic, but that you stretch it in time. So basically the idea is that we're now having these focus programs of 2 to 3 months, but in these 3 months we are having a theme, and all the projects, most of the projects that we're inviting, are in one way or another linked to that theme. when in 2012 I started with that first theme, we wanted to be also a bit funny about it. So the first project for 3 months was called I Fail Good. And the whole idea was that we wanted to talk about failure in a house that in the decades before, in the decade before, had kind of failed a bit because the renovation had been done in 2003-04. And since then, the house was searching for a new identity. So I thought, like, okay, let's start with something that talks about that risk of failure from the start. But it was not a failure, it worked very well. And from there, we went on to where we are now.
Yeah, and I would just say, I think, you know, if you're visiting Brussels, going to Buskaburg is a really exciting experience where you feel like you're seeing, you know, you're seeing really great theatre or dance or contemporary performance, but you're also in a kind of, in a really exciting place where there's a really great mix of people and you kind of feel like, you always feel like you're at a festival. So I think it has that in the best way, it kind of succeeds in that experience. And Bush, could you maybe tell us a little bit, I mean, most people I think will be familiar with Dead Centre's work, but maybe for those we won't assume that everybody is, and to tell a little bit about what you guys are up to right now from between your work here in Ireland and internationally?
Yes, also thanks for inviting me, Rosha, to talk here. Thanks for coming, everybody. Dead Centre, we started in 2012 because the artistic director of the Fringe Festival at that time, somebody called Rosha Goen, encouraged me to make a performance. So we sort of made a solo performance with no ambition to do anything more than that, really, just to get out alive and, you know, 3 stars at least, whatever, you know, something just to get by. And we got momentum, there was momentum after that. We had a good experience. The audiences, by and large, seemed to have had a good experience. So we made another show and kept moving from there and had more opportunities. But to cut to the question of what we're doing now, we are, I suppose, in the context of this panel and European or international work, we have just come from our last premiere was at the Schaubühne in Berlin as an in-house performance there under the banner of Dead Centre, but that's sort of just the creative name that myself and my colleague Ben Kidd joined forces under that name as a director writing partnership. But the premiere was in Berlin, in German, as a foreign show. And then our next performance will be at the Gate Theatre in Dublin Theatre Festival this year. And then in November, we start rehearsing in Vienna, in the Burgtheater, to make a performance which will premiere January 2020, a performance called Traumdeutung, which means the interpretation of dreams by Sigmund Freud. So we're sort of masochistically taking on a urtext of that culture to see, you know, if they've actually read it. There's going to be homework questions in the audience. So that's what we're doing now as a company.
Yeah, it's a little bit like whenever people make productions of Ulysses in Ireland and test whether has anybody actually read it.
Yeah, it's just a bold move. It's a kind of our first performance, this one, Souvenir, was about, based on Proust's book as well, and there's something attractive about, you know, these sort of totems of culture when really nobody has read them. And that's fine. And that's fine, it means you can just put a Beyoncé track in the middle and they go, was it Beyoncé? You go, no, yeah, it was there in the original, there was a, so you have some leeway, you know.
Yeah. I was going to, and everybody always wants Beyonce, let's be honest.
Listen,
so yeah. I was going to start very simply by asking you both whether you think having an international network is important, not just for the funding and production of work, but also for how it actually impacts on the actual art that's made. Do you think international mobility makes art better?
Wow, silence. I'm not sure if the answer is yes or nor the answer is no. I think, what do I think? I'm not sure that having an international network makes your work better in itself. I think by essence, I think you have good work, and it's most of the time, I don't know a lot of artists that first have a network and then create great art. So the thing is, in the essence, I think an artist has something absolutely great, which is sometimes something great can also be something very local that is not able to be translated into other countries, which is also fine. You can be a great artist working on a local scale with a local meaning. There's nothing against that. Mm-hmm. So I think your work has a certain quality that can expand to the rest of the world, and then this might happen or might not happen. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it so much affects the work by origin. What I do think is once that an artist starts traveling and shows his work or her work in other countries, it might nourish projects that will come in the future. So I think it is of the benefit for artists who want to play that role in an international context to get in touch with all these different ways of working, other aesthetics even that are circling even within Europe. And there's a lot of different aesthetics within Europe. So I think it's not no, it's not yes. Mm-hmm. It's somewhere in between for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, similarly, I'm not obviously in a position to say if our work has got better since we've done international, mm-hmm. you know, the audiences who mm-hmm. can decide. But certainly we have an interest in trying to make a show that might be able to work in towards multiple audiences. Mm-hmm. On a basic level, it's funny when it's just strange to write a joke that you know your friends laugh at down mm-hmm. the pub locally, and then you're just doing it in, you know, Korea, and everyone's laughing, and it's this weird experience. Mm-hmm. There was a kind of interesting yearning to see where there's crossovers of, you know, theatrical experience. But whether it leads to better work, yeah, I can't say that. But it's certainly there is a desire to dialogue, you know, with the world.
Yes. I mean, Bush, just on that, like, I'd be interested to know in a way, like, and we mentioned this morning, we were talking about, like, you had a very clear, I mean, definitely from my perspective, having worked with you a little bit on your first two shows, I could definitely see this really clear ambition you had for the work, that it wasn't just going to be about presenting it at Dublin Fringe Festival once, but that was the launch pad to bring you other places. And so I would ask you, you know, with this kind of tremendous success you've had in terms of the touring mobility of your work so far, is that something that happened by, in your mind, by accident or design? And maybe can you tell us a little bit about how that journey has gone?
Yes. Yes, so people who don't know who we are as a company, we've made a few shows, this show called Souvenir, then Lippi, one called Chekhov's First Play, and then a performance co-production with the Abbey called Hamlet, and then Shakespeare's last play was in Berlin last year. And so that's the work we've made, and it's been touring internationally. Before we started Dead Center, I was working as an actor, working mostly with a company called Pan Pan, and cutting my teeth with them, and they tended to tour a lot. So, you know, as an actor, I wasn't a very good actor, it was fine, but you're sort of there. One of the reasons I was bad or fine would be, my mom thinks I'm okay, but the reason I was bad is because I was just not doing my job, and I was going, what are the lights? What are they doing with the lights, man? I would totally do something there. And I was over distracted by the whole event. So I was, but while being an actor and touring with Pan Pan, I got to see how an Irish company could just bring the work around and be dialoguing, you know, and opening doors and presenting work in many festivals. And that sowed a seed, of course, of going, I'm interested intrinsically of a show having life. It's as simple as, so it just doesn't only run for 3 weeks and that's the end of it, you know, so it has a longevity. So that desire was there, but how you manufacture that, and I suppose speaking to any artists who are in the audience going, how will I get my show to go, you know, to those that tend to look like they've been around? Unfortunately, there's no secret, you know, I'm sorry to say.
But I would say, I will push you there and say, Bush, that other people would, like, there is an impression, I think, often that, you know, shows that get picked up for touring, that it kind of happens out of the sky, that some sort of international, you know, performing arts programmer arrives, sees your work and thinks you're the best thing since sliced bread, and that, like, an international touring career just kind of starts to roll out. But in a way, I mean, you did have a little bit of a magical moment with Thomas Ostermeyer, who happened to be in Dublin and came to see your show.
I meant to say, there's elements of luck like that. So what happened with one of our performances is this Chekhov's First Play. We were there doing it in the Dublin Theatre Festival, and there's a moment where one of the characters is talking through a list of names. He's saying, like, oh, the great thing about being an island is nobody's famous, you know? So you wherever you are, you know it's the best place to be because you're not thinking, oh, fuck, somebody else is having a better time in some other place. And then he lists off these names of people like, oh, like, you know, if you're in Paris or Berlin, you just know that, you know, Marina Abramovich and Brad Pitt, and they're off having a great time and you feel really upset that you're not. And then one of the names in this list was Thomas Ostermeyer as the characters. And then I'm there in the booth with my colleague and I'm doing a live director's commentary, and he passes a note to me saying, is that fucking Thomas Ostermeyer there? And I'm just going, and we're passing this note back, I don't know what the fuck he said, and then Ben googling him on Wikipedia, it's fucking him. acting. So, you know, and that's luck, why he was there. Of course, okay, it's a coincidence thing, is, you know, on the one hand, yeah, it's a style of work which had meant that when he was in town, Eugene Downs, who's here now, could say, okay, which show are you looking to see? And Eugene can recommend, okay, why don't you look at this company? So, okay, there's perhaps a style and an aesthetic, but it's hard to bottle it. I don't know what it is. If I would, I would do it every show. You know,
but it's not as simple to say. Like, what I'm trying to say is it's not like you were just, you know, discovered. In a sense, like, you were very strategic. And I would say, like, just to everybody listening, you know, you were really dogged about finding out where are the places I'm interested to go? Who are the people who work there? I'm going to write to them. I'm going to make sure I have a really good video. I'm going to be quite dogged in the pursuit of that. It's not like you just sat there and it happened.
Sure.
It's kind of what I'm...
Yes, I would always say to when you know friends have been making shows that just make a really, really, really good video, and it's more important that you have five people in the audience and a good video than a 100 full house. It's more if you want to get the work on the road. You know, I do think that. So there are certain things you can do to prepare the dossier, so that if you feel, you know, then you can start conversations after the event has happened. You know, get people in on what it might be like and see if they want to program it. So, yes.
Okay. Tom, just to come back to you, I was going to ask you about how this kind of shift from two thematic focuses has affected Bush Gerber's approach to cooperation and the presentation of international work. Because in a way, it's like where other festivals or venues would kind of be interested in following a particular artist's career trajectory or interested in work from a specific place, because you're working on these thematic focuses, often, you know, you're not driven by that same kind of commitment to go, okay, well, we really love Dana Michelle, so we're going to program everything that she makes for the next 5 years.
Yeah, it's a good question. We bumped into that quite quickly, that there is some artists that we really love that were not presented in Brussels unless we did it. And you come into kind of a conflict with your own line of ambition, because Dana Michelle is a good example. We presented all of her work by now, but she didn't always fit our thematical focus. So then you start stretching it a bit. Sometimes you stretch it too much, and then you realize, oh, now we're having a program that has a title that suggests a topic, but basically in there is not so much topic anymore. So there is this balance that you always have to find. What my experience is also is that by being clear what you're doing, you kind of also create a new network of partners that that are close to you. But by that I mean by the topics we set, for instance, they're not random. They're clearly topics that are related to what is happening now, what we think is happening now at least. And it makes connections with the international scene of other venues or even also other artists and organizations that are closely linked to that kind of topic. So suddenly there's a new kind of network established where the whole idea of a seasonal program goes to the background. And funny enough, topics and content comes to the foreground, which is a bit funny because you would think if everything is open and you can do whatever, that the content would be on the foreground, but that's not always happening. So it's this kind of conversation about topics and about what we can do together in that international context, in fact, has grown since we have decided to do more on a thematical basis.
And could you maybe talk a little bit about, yesterday we were talking about this new European project you're going to be working on, which is kind of a legacy of Tashwish, which was a focus program you had at Buskaburg, which focused on artists. Well,
in fact, Tashwish was already like an example of something that happened because we were working in focus programs. Because the first one we did in 2017, by pure coincidence, because we started preparing it in 2016, but by the time we made that focus program, which was called The Future is Feminist, it was exactly at that time that the Me Too, it's not a campaign, the movement came out. But of course, we already prepared it, so it was something that was hanging in the air, apparently, and that we were working with. And at the moment we had that program, the Me Too movement was there. Out of that came a lot of collaborations, also internationally. That's what I said when I say, like, okay, suddenly you feel like there's other partners in Europe thinking of same topics or topics that are related to it, that get in touch. That's how we continued working for the year after on that project that you just mentioned, Tashwish, and that was a collaboration with Goethe Institute. And Tashwish was basically a project on feminism and forms of feminism in the MENA region. So it was a kind of more focused story of what we already did the year before, just with the broad thing of feminism.
That being Middle East, North Africa.
Yeah, region. But then focused on, okay, how do they look at that word feminism in that context? And that was a first collaboration with Goethe Institute. And what we're now trying to do is apply for a EU fund for Creative Europe to make kind of second edition of that Tashwish, because we felt, okay, we started something, but it's there's more to say about it. So that's what we are doing now, trying to find our partners. Well, basically, our partners find us as well. It's the same story again. So it's a connection that is based. That's something I also wanted to add to the discussion. I think this network thing for me is not so much something that has to do with quantity. I know a lot of people who have a big, much bigger network than I have internationally. But for me, the network is about quality. It's about having very, very specific people or organizations in that international field that I know are dealing with the same topics, that have people working there that I have a deep trust in or that I got to know very well. Because that's the basis where you can work very quickly, because I know, okay, that person there we'll look at it more or less in the same way, so we can really proceed quite quickly. So for me, it's also really about quality of the of the network.
And do you think, I wonder as well, when we think about this idea, you mentioned a little bit about Dan Michel and the thematic focus, but like this idea of supporting artists over time, how important is it for you as a person who has a full-time job and a salary and job security, who is traveling and who is creating these networks with people you trust internationally, to act as an advocate for, because I mean, in Buskaburg, it's very much about the kind of young emerging scene in Brussels. How much of a responsibility do you feel to act as an ambassador and an advocate, and also to kind of create opportunities for mobility for artists that you encounter locally?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think it's really our duty almost, because what you see is a lot of emerging and young artists don't have the means to travel just for the sake of traveling and making connections. The only way they can travel is because they get invited to show it somewhere. Mm-hmm. But of course, if you don't have the network, you're not getting invited. Mm-hmm. So it's this vicious circle that you have to get out of. And I think there the programmers, the curators, the artistic directors have a big role to play. In their traveling, for sure, for emerging artists to really spread the word. We have four associated artists in the house that I'm basically the advocate of their work. I'm telling everybody who wants to know about their work, because I think they're good. And larger than that, a lot of artists that come in the house, when we're enthusiastic about it and about the collaboration, I really am happy to share. So everywhere we go, we try to promote that work. And we also stepped clearly for that reason in some networks. We're having an informal network that we're part of, which is called WEB. It's important that it's informal because it gets no funding from nowhere. It's just, again, on this idea of some partners internationally that come together out of their own will, because they want to be together, sit together, and share information. And the idea is that we select two projects by young emerging artists per year that we all together want to support, put money in, give residencies, even sometimes write a dossier for application, and there make the difference in order for them to have a small tour. Because what happens if we select their project, we're seven partners, they also immediately have seven places where they can present the work once it's made. So it's kind of, making things go a bit faster than when they have to do it just by themselves. Because,
And who is in that network?
Well, it's a lot of different partners. What we always wanted was that partners would be able to, of course, present the work, but also be able to produce some work. Not all partners have to have the same qualities. For instance, in Belgium, it's us being more like a presentation place, and we can co-produce because we have money. And then there's a workspace. It's WP Zimmer in Antwerp that is part of it. And WP Zimmer has very little money, I would say, so they cannot put in the money. Basically, that's what we do. But they offer residency place, and they often also help with, for instance, the dossier writing. In Amsterdam, it's Frascati, because they have the two of them together. They're a working space, but at the same time, a presentation place. Who else is in there? I have to think. Black Box in Oslo is in there. Uzès Festival in the south of France, which is a bit of a special place because she doesn't have a venue. So she's somebody who is also really eager to be part of that network, because for her, this is with a festival that's happening once a year, little budget. She gets a lot of information. So also there, it's a network that's beneficial for the artists, but also for the curators who are part of it. There's quite some others in there, but
That's great. Can we talk a little bit now? I mean, I suppose about this idea of that like moving on from that about kind of power and kind of hierarchies and in relation to international mobility and in terms of like how much agency artists have in kind of determining the direction in which they're going, and also how often that kind of sense of international mobility and who is traveling and why they're traveling is often influenced. I would say provocatively, often by kind of, you could say it might be what's in the ether, but also, you know, international mobility is really the victim often of kind of fashion in terms of what's hot right now. And often perhaps the reason why an artist might not be touring internationally is because what they're making isn't so hot right now. Mm. And actually to kind of tease that out a little bit, I mean, when we talked about this morning, I mean, I think definitely in the kind of Northern European context, you definitely feel like that there are particular topics that are of interest, and if you're making work on those topics, great, you're more likely to tour. Sometimes even when the work maybe isn't that strong, but because it's kind of related to a particular theme or idea, whereas you could be making really extraordinary work that just doesn't speak to the kind of contemporary moment in the same way, and therefore is less likely to ignite. I mean, do you think that's a fair assessment, Tom?
Yeah, I agree. I have to... I can see it happening as well. There is indeed some topics that you can be the right artist in the right place, and then you can tour quite quickly everywhere. And we spoke about it this morning at breakfast. At this moment in time, being a white middle class man in the 30s, sorry for that, making very interesting work is not really a good base to start for an international career. And that's just a fact, which is a lot to do with the fashion of the day. And of course, the fashion of the day will change again, and then maybe...
In fairness, you've had a good long run at it, so... Like.
I'm looking forward to retirement, retiring tomorrow.
So but being aware of that and talking about that openly is, I think, also important, because we don't want to close down opportunities for people, but there is something which is fashionable. And the fashions, I mean, when I started in the beginning of the 2000s, there was at least in Belgium a very big fashion towards, let's call it more abstract, very minimalist work that toured a lot. By now, I have to say that in my venue, for instance, minimalistic abstract work, we don't present it anymore. So these kind of waves of what is in and what is out is it has always been at stake. And I think when we're now talking about feminism, which is also part of that wave, for sure. Decolonization, that's the topics that are really on it now. Sustainability, that kind of things are very much in the center of what also the performing arts is busy with. So it's unavoidable that this is reflected upon the stage as well.
I mean, Bush, from your perspective, is that something that you will be aware of, or feeling like, oh, I'm meeting the same kind of artists here? Or do you think, because in a way you're already kind of in quite a different context, where you're working at, like, largely, I would say, very prestigious large festivals, and then now with these commissions from, you know, very well-established city theatres. And I suppose as well, your work is kind of, you know, you're engaging with the canon and kind of subverting the canon in the way that you make your work. So, you know, it's not the same as the kind of more kind of indie, cutting edge venues around.
Yeah, as we said, it's not cool. Yeah, I know. Just say the word, man. Just say the word.
It's cool, okay. In a different way.
No, it's not cool, and my career's over. This is a great. This has been a good conference for me. How are you guys doing?
But you're in the places that have, in fairness, more funding.
Listen,
and
there was a lot of
larger audiences
there. But I guess one of the things I was thinking about, we're talking about, yeah, about relevance and what's hot and what's fashionable and how can you respond to that. I suppose the question of relevance from an artistic point of view, creative point of view, is such a complicated one.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose, unless, you know, depends what your practice is. If your work is activism, and naturally it's agitating whatever topic or event needs to be, you know, tackled. If you're trying to make, I guess, imaginative aesthetic work, how you gauge, you know, if you start going, fuck, I better do a climate change show, man, now. What do I do? What should I do? Rain, and then there should be an ice bit, and I don't know. And then it gets hot at the end. Maybe we'll like heat the room up really hot. I don't know. Like, so you get a bit thrown about, you know, with these kind of things. So, but at the same time, you are in the world. The live arts are in the world. I always said, we were talking earlier, there's this, you know, it's, if you were painting a picture, it's theoretically possible to say, well, you know, I don't give a damn about anybody who's going to see this now. My real audience is 200 years from now. Okay, you might go, okay, you're a bit crazy, you're just in denial, nobody likes your painting, but okay. But it's logic, it's theoretically logical that you're painting for an audience not here. Whereas if somebody's making a theatre performance and they were saying, you know, my audience, I'm making this show for an audience 200 years from now. That's just crazy. It doesn't make any sense. You know? So you're always, the audience as they are there is in the live medium is so relevant and so reacting and being in dialogue with the contemporary world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it comes, you have to. But chasing that down in a reactive way so you get programmed in the, you know, it's gonna be that's a poison chalice, you know, that's not the way to go.
No. But it is also interesting in terms of the life cycles of performance, because as you say, performance is something that's like, you know, kind of usually about the very much about the current moment. And when you see work that that continues to, like, there are some shows that can just tour forever, and others where you feel like they can blaze really hot for a year, and then the moment that they're responding to is kind of over, and that can kind of determine the end of a touring life of something as well. Anyway, Bush, could you also talk to us a little bit about this idea of, like, you know, now with, you know, you've made these series of projects rooted in Ireland and Dublin, and then brought them out to the world. But you've also, with Shakespeare's last play at the Shabuna, and now with this new project you're making at the Burgtheater, made works like actually in situ with a company, an ensemble of actors in those theatres. How is that experience different? And do you think that that has changed or will change or influence your work with kind of dead center as we understand it in an entity of its own?
To talk about what it was like, it was intense. Because I don't speak German. So that's if you're gonna make a show in German and you don't speak it, there's your first problem.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a tricky obstacle, but these, you know, you're there suddenly in this rehearsal room and there's 20 people between actors and technical support and, you know, the design team, and everybody, because of these two Egypts in the corner, me being one of them and my colleague Ben being the other, because of our inability to speak German, everybody's speaking English. And it's like quite a remarkable and very moving, humbling kind of concession that is being made, but it's just what they do. They work with Katie Mitchell, they work with Simon McBurney, they work with Castellucci. And us, I was just putting us in that bracket. but they work with international directors, so like, you know, that concession and that gesture to internationalism, and that's just to rehearse the thing, and then it's performed in German. So, and they throw money at that. It's just unthinkable to imagine, like, you know, a major theatre all doing it in French because there's a French director. And I mean, it's kind of a crazy. Of course, English is, you know, the impact of that language being the lingua franca of the West, I suppose. You know, there's those reasons. But anyway, the experience of doing it, meeting halfway, dialoguing in certain ways, certainly has had an impact on our work. Mm-hmm. I can't really assess it. One obvious way is our next premiere, called Beckett's Room, which will be in Dublin Theatre Festival at the Gate, is in three languages. And even though now, when the artistic director of the Gate, Selina Cartmel, is going, you know, oh, fucking, is that going to be okay? How many subtitles are you? And she's like, no, only wonderfully. I mean, she's great and supportive, but she's nervously. And I'm going, oh shit, maybe it is really alienating. Talking Vivian de Moik from Belgium, and, you know, two performers from the Schaubühne, an Irish performer, two French performers. You know, it sort of seems. That's probably had an influence. But again, that's actually just telling Beckett's story, trying to tell his story well. And he was part of that, you know, the history of Irish Europeanism, which started where he was influenced by Joyce. And Joyce wanted to situate his work in the European tradition, you know, and move out of what was the Celtic revival that was happening. He just didn't want to see his work situated in that way. So I suppose in a way we're just responding to Beckett, but yeah, as practitioners, our experiences working in international contexts have bled into how you tell a story.
Well, it's interesting there in coming back to this idea of, like, you're making this work about Beckett and Beckett's, like, European life, and you think about, and we're in this conversation we're having about the importance of international mobility. I always think about that quote, which, like, for a long time annoyed me. It both annoys me and pleases me, which is the quote about Beckett saying that leaving Ireland was like getting out of jail in springtime. You know, but, like, there is that thing of, I would posit that actually we need to be, from an Irish perspective, we're a small island, we need to be international, we need to travel, we need to have international voices coming in, because if we're, I mean, and you think about, like, the great kind of playwrights of our time, you know, Marina Carr, what she's writing is about is the idea that, like, if you're insular, you're in trouble, you know, like, that we need to be looking out all the time.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, I mean, I live in Ireland because I'm English, as you can hear from my voice, but, you know, because I want to be European, I live in Ireland, you know, rather than England, because we know where that's going. So, there is, with all our, you know, Ireland being a foundation, there is a great support, the Culture Ireland network to support international touring, a great place to make work and then move from there and get in dialogue. It's a great foundation. But like you say, somebody like Beckett, in that context of the Second World War, they're fighting for an internationalism, you know, against a rising nationalism, against a separation, you know, and this project we're making in Vienna about Freud and his interpretation of dreams, at the heart of that is whether we all have Oedipus complexes. I mean, I do, I don't know about you guys, but whatever, like, whether or not, whatever about whether that's true or not, the bottom line being, it's a prayer for universality. Freud, at the heart of it, is just saying, I think we're the same. And that's at a time of rising nationalism, of anti-Semitism, and separation of nation states, and coming up, the First World War is around the corner. So again, it's behind his probably incorrect theory that all dreams are wish fulfillments leading back to an Oedipus complex. That's, who knows if that's probably false. But there's a prayer for common ground. There's a prayer to say, even if it's in a very sad, we're all unhappy way, but we're all unhappy together, you know?
Yeah. I'm aware of time as well, and I want to open the floor up to some questions as well. But just to finish off, I wanted to ask you guys about this question of, like, you know, we're talking about, you know, increasingly politically polarizing times, you know, the kind of really feeling the impact of neoliberal economics and austerity policies, and how they've affected artists, which I think, you know, yesterday was really the tone of the conversation around how difficult things are, and then also thinking about this kind of rising urgency around climate change and the need for radical action. you know, can we think about sustainability really in the context of international mobility, both financial sustainability, which often, you know, opening the door to international co-producers and partners can offer more stability, but at the same time, thinking about the kind of ecological sustainability and how we approach the international mobility of both artists and programmers. Because, I mean,
yeah, there's a paradox, isn't there?
Yeah,
we want to be all connected and fly around everywhere, and then also we should not be flying around, we should take trains and stay at home, you know?
Mm.
So, I don't know, that's a contradiction. I think it's that's a problem.
Yeah, I agree. It's a paradox, but I do think something has changed. I think we still have this tradition of flying around. I'm quite convinced that we're flying more than essentially we need to.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I think this is something to do with that we're flying around from the time of before the internet existed. So everything we did was making connection and opening up this European and even this global network of connections by meeting each other.
But of course, there's Skype. So what the hell are we doing?
No, but I think, but I do think that for a lot of things that still people travel nowadays, this could be replaced by that. Which doesn't mean that showing your work. Of course, you'd need to travel somewhere to show your work. You're not gonna go ending up with presenting it through Skype, but.
Yeah, but very rarely. Like, to posit that, I would say, yeah, it's great. You can use Skype and you can use email when you already have a relationship with partners who you trust and know, for sure.
Yeah.
But often that can't replace the actual.
That's true.
Getting to know people, having awkward conversations, ending up getting drunk with them in the bar, and like then kind of becoming friends.
What?
When you both admit that, like,
you
know, you're like really nervous and you don't really feel like you belong and blah 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 blah. But also then there's the thing of, in terms of. Like, I mean, it's really good to have good documentation of your work on video, but I mean, nobody ever really books a show cold from just seeing it on video. I mean, you might book a show from seeing the video if you know the company, you know the work, you've had a really strong personal recommendation, but like without that sense of understanding a particular, and also understanding maybe the context of where that work comes from. You know, if I send you a video of a show from Galway and you've never been to Galway,
mm-hmm.
and you don't understand the context of what that landscape is like, what that city is like, what's going on, what the artists are talking about, what they're thinking, you know, you will read that completely differently if you know that place, and you will think about the right context that you could plant it into. If you don't know the place, you're never going to get that.
Yeah, but
no.
We were saying that the problem is if everyone flies into Galway to see the thing, and then this ecological impact of carbon emissions means Galway then sinks, you know, and gets flooded underwater, you know, then it was better to just not see Galway and let Galway exist. Then if you look and then it dies, you know, so it's just kind of what you do.
Or at least we should look at the middle road somewhere, because the thing is, it's true that I have been flying myself to New York for many years for Under the Radar Festival, for instance, and this thing called APAP.
Mm.
But then arriving there, I most of the time met all my Belgian colleagues again. Basically, we were 10, 20, and I'm not exaggerating, 10 to 20 programmers from Belgium. And the most constructive talks we had was about, oh, what are you going to do in Mechelen and what are you going to do in Antwerp? And basically, so the talk was, in the end, a very local talk in this international context.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying we shouldn't travel anymore, not at all, but maybe we can be more selective, because we should do something, and technology is our hope that sooner or later we'll find that there is airplanes who don't have any emission anymore. But till that moment, we cannot avoid also having an attitude problem that we should travel less. I flew in here, so I'm guilty as always, but there should be something that we have to address as well. And the thing is, we talked about it this morning as well, there's some good colleagues of us that decided, okay, I'm not going to fly anymore. But that decision, they can only make that decision because all the others are still flying. What I mean is the international network is still operating because there is so much network. The moment all programmers and all directors and all artists stop flying, the network will evaporate, and that's also a pity.
Katie Mitchell is famously a director who takes trains and doesn't fly, but then she enjoys spaghetti bolognese, and the meat industry is worse than the flight. So I don't know. There's no.
we're an island, and actually it's difficult, you know, if you're based in Brussels, it's kind of much easier to say that you're not going to fly, because you can get the train to Berlin, and you can get the train to Paris, and you can, you know, you can get the train to Italy or even Denmark. Whereas for us, you know, actually that mobility is important. But one thing I would say in terms of that, like, conversation about the climate justice and climate change and our commitment to that within the arts, is that, like, I think, and again, it's like, I feel like now I'm saying the things that Willie White was saying like 15 years ago, but I think they're still relevant, that, like, particularly with Brexit on the horizon, we always have this focus and idea where we think that, like, our market is in the US or in the UK or in Australia, because those places are Anglophonic, and that, you know, we have a lot of immigrants there and they understand us. But I think we're still, we really, really need to work in Ireland on broadening our network in continental Europe, because that's the place that's close to us. That's the you know, union that we're a part of, and where there is actual funding available for us to kind of create those networks. And yet it's not the first place we look, and I think that's kind of a shame. What do you think about that?
Oh, right, was there a yeah, interesting. The Anglophone, like yeah, going to common ground of, like, you know, we were talking about a playwright who I admire so much, and his work doesn't travel, and I didn't know why, but it's very text-based, you know, really heavy. And we go, oh, is that right? Is that really the issue? Perhaps rather more non-linguistic performances. But I guess, yeah, our experience of going to Europe, I've always been interested in misunderstanding, you know, and how we misunderstand each other as well. Mm-hmm. It's kind of curious. And so there's a great opportunity in people speaking across purposes as well. So I don't know what the question, but I agree with going looking to European networks that are there is definitely wise.
Yeah, and Tom, I mean, I would ask you as well, and this is maybe a hard question, and I think, you know, we're all here and we're curious to know, so you could be honest, but like, the thing I would have encountered through, I mean, I've spent most of the last 2 years working at an art centre in Belgium, which Tom also used to work at, but much longer time ago, and I was kind of, you know, shocked when I arrived there, it being a place that I would have travelled to so much over the years, but how in the Belgian context there is such little knowledge or interest in Belgium in Irish work. Like, none of my Belgian colleagues have been to Ireland to see work. I mean, they have now, because I've, like, literally dragged them on the plane. But why do you think, I mean, what could we be doing better in terms of creating an interest or a kind of, to pique the interest of Northern European programmers and institutions, so that they might take more interest in the work that's happening here?
Well, you're absolutely right. I can only confirm, as I said when I started, it was more than 20 years ago that I was in Ireland. And when I was here, I was just as a tourist. I was not actively in my profession yet. Well, I think what you're doing now with me, and you can do it with a lot of others, is really is that first step in making clear that this connection is wanted. That I mean, and you're yourself very central figure in that, being worked in a European country, and now making this connection to Ireland. So I think you need people, and that's the personal network again, based on trust. Where I know now that, okay, if I need to know something about Irish performing arts, that I can give you a call, and you will send me some directions where to look at. And those are your personal individual tastes, of course, but there's many people in the room who all have their own individual tastes, and this makes a network where a lot of artists can benefit from. So I think...
And do you think that's more important? So, for example, like, we have showcase platforms at festivals, largely in September and October, and I think the problem consistently is, I'm aware of the time, is that the times that our festivals happen generally are very busy in terms of schedules in Europe, with season openings and other festivals going on. And so often those programmers don't come in. So is it important? What's more important, the showcase or the relationship?
That's a question that will be differently answered when you have somebody else sitting here. For me, it's the personal relationship. But I do know there's also a lot of people who really are attracted to this platform idea. Talking about ecology, they can fly in, see a lot of shows, and fly out, and on that base, it's more efficient. So it depends a bit on whom you're asking. But still there, if you're doing a platform and you organize it, you need people like yourself and like many others here in the room that make this connection to European programmers and curators. They know, like, hey guys, there's a platform, there's really some interesting work, you should come and see it, because the calendar of all of us in Europe, in Ireland, in the UK is full, so you have to have somebody who personally tells you this should be on top of your agenda. And that's where the personal thing comes in again, whether you have a great platform or not.
Yeah.
For me,
yeah. Okay, I think we started a little bit late, so Irma, do we have like 5 minutes for questions or 10 minutes for questions? Anna's saying yes. Does anybody have any questions? We've got Tom and somebody in the front. Would you like to go first?
Is the question to me, sorry, or to all of us? Yeah.
Well, I mean, as an artist based in Ireland and making work here, I don't feel isolated because of there are networks being found, there are conversations, and really, I mean, again, to pick one thing, that this touring, fund available through the government organization Culture Ireland. This doesn't really exist in many other countries, so it's not supposed to be a fund that's relied on. I mean, one, you're supposed to kind of try to, don't have to always be using it, but it's there, that you can apply to, and that in itself is a great kind of support network for artists here to move work, internationally.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's a privilege. That Ireland is kind of privileged in that, in having that. So that's one, and then, there's also benefits in not making work where you're not in the middle of a complete maelstrom of work and loads of things happening. There's a kind of about the privacy and integrity of just making work in a space where you're really just focusing and on your own, going on your own path. And then you can assess afterwards, right, what the fuck do I do with this now? I think it's pretty good, what do I do with it? And then so there's also creative, because that's the most important thing. Creative benefits in being slightly
off center. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom?
Thanks for all of that. It was interesting that you wrote this idea about the island, the islandness of Ireland.
Mm-hmm.